This is CliffCentral.com. Health Hour on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning to you. This is Jonathan Sinclair, and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy for this edition of the Health Hour. Being a doctor, she has lots of business to attend to and lives to save, so we'll let her have her day today. But today, I am joined in studio by two very special ladies who have dealt with diabetes their whole lives, and it has just been World Diabetes Day. I think it was on the 14th of November. So we're really just commemorating diabetes, focusing on what it is, and especially how it affects youth. Now, it's one thing to go through your life and to make bad decisions and make bad eating habits and develop type 2 diabetes. That's one thing. But it's another thing when you are born with type 1 diabetes and you really had no say in the issue. And I suppose as a child growing up with diabetes, you see other children eating sweets at the tuck shop, or you see them with ice cream, and you maybe don't understand why you aren't allowed these things. So I really want to just find out from my guests today who grew up with type 1 diabetes, how they perceived life at a young age and how they coped with it and how their parents taught them that there was something different about them. So I'm joined in studio by Kerry Calvate is her surname. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us here, being willing to be open and speak about your disease. Kerry, just why don't you tell me a bit about yourself and your story?
Okay, thank you so much for having me. My name is Kerry, and I'm currently a master's student at the University of Pretoria. I'm busy researching diabetes. I also work for an organization called Youth with Diabetes, which is a nonprofit organization. And we basically run camps for children with diabetes, which we have fun and we do education on the camps. And then we also do support groups and raise awareness about diabetes in schools.
Okay, so obviously you have an invested interest in diabetes because you have it yourself. And is that really why you wanted to give back?
Yes, I think so. But also, the more I got exposed to diabetes in our country, the more I wanted to get involved, just because there's so much to do in diabetes, both in type 1 and type 2, that isn't being done in our country.
Okay, so what exactly are you studying? Because what are you hoping to eventually accomplish in terms of diabetes and your career?
I'm studying an MSc in clinical epidemiology. Mm-hmm. I know it's a long word. My mom has to write it down on the fridge to tell people. But basically what it means is, or what I'm doing, is running clinical trials for new management perspectives on diabetes. So what I do is I work with patients. Currently, I work with patients in Kalafong and Steve Biko Hospital in Pretoria. And basically, we run new management systems to see if we can improve diabetes control.
Okay, so what is wrong with the current management systems that we have that you want to change these? Is there something specific that you have a problem with?
Basically in South Africa, we are actually really lucky because our insulin is funded by the government, mm-hmm. which is a major problem in other African countries where it is not sponsored by the government. Mm-hmm. And insulin is actually really expensive. So in that part, South Africa is really fortunate in that regard. However, at the moment, test strips to test your blood sugar mm-hmm. is not a national tender. Okay. So it depends on what hospital you go to that the strips will be available. So hospitals here in Gauteng are quite well funded, and so their budgets are larger and they can purchase strips. But hospitals outside, affluent areas, so, you know, even Bloemfontein, Kimberley, those types of areas, the availability of strips is not good. Mm-hmm. So patients with diabetes often will only get about 50 strips per month to test their sugar. And children with diabetes are recommended to test their sugar about 4 times a day.
So 50 strips a month is nowhere near.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So basically, one of the things that I deal with is to how to optimize using those strips that you have.
Okay. All right. So you can make it work. And what are the dangers, though, if a child who does have diabetes isn't testing up to 4 times a day? If they're eating right and if they're doing the right things that they're supposed to do, is there a need to test 4 times a day?
So basically, I mean, it's recommended that you test 4 times a day, but it's not absolutely necessary. Okay. The danger, however, is if you don't have strips, that if you can't test your sugar, you may be low and not know it. So the problem with having a low blood sugar is that you don't have enough glucose going to your brain, and basically it causes different symptoms. You know, the mild symptoms is hunger, irritation, maybe get dizzy, you feel weak. But as those symptoms progress, as your sugar gets more low, then you will start having blackouts, seizures, and you could go into a coma.
Yeah, I think a lot of us who aren't directly affected by diabetes don't realize the extent of it. I just want to play us a little clip for myself included, or for anyone who doesn't exactly know the technicality behind diabetes. Let's just check it out quick.
Diabetes is a common condition that affects all kinds of people all over the world. It prevents your body from making enough insulin and using it properly. What's insulin? Well, insulin is a hormone your body needs to change food into energy. This is very important because your body needs energy to work well. Your body is made up of many different organs, and they do many different things. One of these organs is called the pancreas, which is where your body makes insulin. When you eat something, your digestive system breaks the food down so it can move through your blood and into your cells. Carbohydrates, or starches, are broken down into glucose, a type of sugar. Your cells use glucose as fuel. Insulin moves glucose out of your blood and into your cells. That's so your body can create enough energy to get you through the day.
Okay, so that's just a 1 minute quick tutorial. I'm sure there's a hell of a lot more that goes into this. But now, talk to me, Kerry, about, you were obviously born with type 1 diabetes, or did it develop into your childhood, or how did it come about?
Okay, so what happens is basically type 1 diabetes is characterized, or how it forms, is basically an autoimmune destruction of your pancreatic cells. So basically what that means is your white blood cells start seeing the cells in your pancreas as foreign, and they start attacking them, and basically your insulin production declines to zero eventually. Along the way, you will develop the symptoms of diabetes, which is frequent urination, very quick weight loss. We're talking about probably 10 kilos in 2 weeks, sort of thing.
Excessive thirst, I would imagine.
Yes, very excessive thirst. Yeah. And then sometimes blurry vision, things like that. So those are your main symptoms. And then basically with type 1 diabetes, you will not make any insulin whatsoever. And then that's why you need to inject insulin and take insulin. Yeah. So, and the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes is that type 2 diabetes is also a progressive disease, but it's a lot slower. And basically, it's also accompanied with insulin resistance, where basically that means the insulin that you are producing, your body's cells isn't readily absorbing it. And obviously, there's a lot of different factors involved. But the risk factors for type 2 diabetes is overweight, family history, very much so, and being overweight, unhealthy eating, lack of exercise, that sort of thing. But at the same time, a lot of people think that, you know, type 2 diabetes is your fault. And okay, yes, lifestyle factors do account for it. But also, it is a very much hereditary condition compared.
So it's unfair to think that someone who develops type 2 diabetes later on in life is to blame.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, not all fat people have diabetes, and not all people with diabetes are fat, but with type 2 diabetes, like, if that's how you think.
Okay. So now, you obviously work for an organization, Youth with Diabetes. Now, how do children get diagnosed? I mean, they can't really communicate for themselves up until the age of whatever, 5. How do the parents know there's something wrong with my child?
Well, I mean, diabetes can, type 1 diabetes can come about from early months of childhood all the way up to 40 years old. So I mean, it's not only very, very young children mm-hmm. that get diabetes, type 1 diabetes. So, I mean, we get a range of children from, yes, from a few months old, but also up until 21, 25, 30 sort of thing that are diagnosed. So, okay, for the younger kids, parents will see that their children are very thirsty, like we said, very thirsty, losing weight. Mm-hmm. I mean, if in a young infant, you'll see that your child isn't picking up weight according to the normal standards. You'll see that they're probably losing weight, mm-hmm. things like that. And we also try to educate the teachers as well, because often teachers spend more time with those children than their parents do. So we try to educate teachers as well to pick up
what
those
to look
signs.
Out for.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so there obviously must be challenges once a child is diagnosed with this, and they have to sort of not be allowed to live a normal life in terms of what they eat at school, and children love sweets. And how, growing up with diabetes, how is your life affected in the practical sense?
Well, I think one of the main misconceptions about diabetes is that somebody with diabetes can't eat sweets and treats and things. There's a new concept that's called carbohydrate counting, which is basically that the concept that you need insulin for glucose, but glucose comes from a variety of things. So glucose comes from apples, fruits, yes, sweets and sugar, but also milk and dairy, and then your starches. So, you know, rice, pasta, pop, etc., bread. So your body doesn't understand where that glucose came from. So as long as you can quantify that glucose and you can match your insulin to it, that's the concept that we use. Mm-hmm. So to say that sweets and chocolates and things are completely out is incorrect. So obviously we don't advocate that you just eat sweets all the time, because no healthy person should be doing that. But I mean, if a child with diabetes would want to have a sweet or chocolate or cake, or if they're having, you know, if they have a class party or things, we advocate healthy choices. So for instance, at a class party, instead of eating your normal sandwiches, we say, okay, well, substitute your sandwich, your one of your sandwiches with a piece of chocolate cake, mm-hmm. because you can then swap out your carbohydrates.
All right, so it's really a balancing act.
For sure.
I suppose for a child, there's a lot more challenges, and we'll get into that. Just before we carry on be rude, we're joined by our next guest who is stuck in traffic. Lisa, thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Yeah, sorry about the Joburg traffic. Get right up close to that mic.
All right.
Yeah, so you had a stressful morning. I was also stuck in a bit of traffic. We understand,
it's
living
horrible.
In Joburg, this is what happens. All right, so Lisa, you're also obviously involved with youth with diabetes.
Yes. And
you were the one who contacted Dr. Cindy, and you really wanted to get a message across and really speak out. And as I mentioned earlier, on the 14th of November, if I'm not mistaken, was World Diabetes Day. So this is really topical right now and something that we do need to speak about. But Lisa, won't you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about your story?
All right. My name is Lisa. My surname is Van Dorsten. And I've been with Youth Diabetes, well, since I was little, like at school, or also going to the camps and so on. And then I decided, like, I want to be a leader, join, also took the courses, became a leader. And then, since 2008, we've been doing the camps and the stuff, just educating kids, you know, because the thing is, I've had a very, very good education in terms of diabetes, how to manage it. So I've had a really good doctor. And the thing is that I want kids out there to have the same thing that I got. Mm-hmm. And many of them don't at all. There's a very, very big misconception about diabetes, ignorance, like hectic. So that's what I'm about.
Okay, so obviously you see kids that are educated about it, and then you see kids who aren't. What are the different factors in their lives? How do their lives pan out differently when they are not educated?
Well, basically it's all about your control, your daily control, your daily management of things. So in the end, your lifespan will be influenced because of that. If you don't manage your diabetes every day, you'll end up having a shorter life because of your HbA1c, your sugars being too high. So you'll end up developing long-term complications much sooner, basically. Mm-hmm. It'll determine your quality of life that you'll have. So we've been diabetics for very long now. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long, Kerry?
11 years.
11 years.
So yeah. I'm going on my 14th year as well.
And you're both young people, so that's the majority of your lives, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So if you manage it well and you have your ups and downs and you get tired of it sometimes, but if you manage it well, like the education that I've gotten, you're fine, perfectly well. There's nothing you can't do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember when you first found out that you had diabetes, when it first sunk in for you, how you reacted, Lisa?
I was at my dad's for the weekend. I was going to bed with a 2-liter bottle of water and drinking constantly, going to the toilet all the time, and couldn't understand what was going on. Went to the doctor, and he basically just tested my sugar. It was over with it. It was too high, way too high. I didn't get sick like most people. They land up in the ICU or so. But I was upset. I didn't know why. I cried when the doctor told me, listen, you've got diabetes, but I had no idea what it was. Just knew it's going to impact my life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then I suppose, how do your parents start? Do you need counseling? It's a big shock to anyone's life, and to realize those lifestyle changes that are going to be with you for the rest of your life. You can't really eat like a normal person and stuff. And I suppose, did you guys ever feel bitter about it? Did you ever think, why me? What did I do to deserve this? Because as a child, your brain is thinking differently. You're not rationalizing like an adult. Kerry, how did you experience that?
Well, I had a similar situation to Lisa where I was lucky enough, to catch it early. Mm-hmm. Because like we said, a lot of kids do actually end up in hospital, end up in a coma, and they're then diagnosed because people aren't aware of those symptoms.
Sure.
So like we said, we were lucky in that, we were introduced to diabetes in not such a severe way.
Yeah.
But for me, I have a very strong history of diabetes, both type 1 and type 2. So I sort of had an idea of what diabetes was. But I think everybody, whether you are older or younger, will go through some sort of, anger and confusion as to, why did this happen to me? Now I have to, change. Mm-hmm. And I think to deal with that, well, sort of after you're diagnosed, basically, you should be referred to an endocrinologist. So whether that's public or private, they have specialized doctors who deal with patients with diabetes and other hormonal conditions. And basically, also managing diabetes requires a health team. So you need somebody, yes, you need an endocrinologist, but we also have diabetes educators, which are nurses that have specialized in diabetes and basically help you and coach you how to adjust your new lifestyle and what to do. And so I spent about 3 hours with me and my family, with a diabetes educator. And, they sort of just take you through, okay, what is diabetes? Why do you have to take insulin? They help you take your first injection. Obviously, if you're little, your parents have to do that for you, that sort of thing. But they really do guide you in how to go through diabetes. And I think people who didn't get that sort of education, that first-time education, are really at a massive loss because they're sort of just given these injections and told, okay, listen, inject this many times and stuff, and they just...
They don't understand why.
No, they don't understand why. They don't understand, how many times or what this is actually doing, and, So I think education in that sort of point of view, like we said, is critical because it helps you understand what's going on, what you should do, how to manage your sugars, and what we're also trying to do is basically try to form a network of children and parents who have children with diabetes. You don't feel alone, because people or children with diabetes are usually the only kid with diabetes in their school.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel very isolated, you feel very different. I know a lot of kids at school, at primary school, get bullied and teased.
Sure.
About diabetes, and then in high school they just try to hide it away because they don't want to be different. and then they avoid taking their insulin, you know, their sugars get out of control, things like that.
I would imagine it is quite a challenge at school if you having to inject yourself, go to the bathroom, carry around your kit, especially at a primary school level. I can imagine that can be quite traumatizing. But now at these camps that you guys run, is there a sense of community among the kids? Do they find that they are able to connect with one another on that level of we're both suffering with this, let's be friends?
Yeah, for sure. It's always like when you go on the camp and he's like, hey, you also do that with your insulin pain. Jeez, I thought I was the only one. And then they laugh about it and they're friends forever. And that's the main thing about the camps, I think, is that just discovering that you're not alone. And there's many, many kids out there actually that have the same problem. And then they meet on the camps and they get along so well. And it's, you know, diabetes is a very psychological thing as well. There can be a lot of issues, like kids injecting too much insulin because they want sweets, because their mom is restricting sweets from them.
Okay.
Then they inject too much insulin at one time. They go low. They tell their parents or someone they're low, get sweets, and that's it. Or they hide their food behind the cupboards or something, and they don't inject. All sorts of issues. If you make an issue about certain things in diabetes with kids, you will get it back double. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's quite challenging, I think, for the parents as well. And you mentioned earlier the nurses that sort of train the family in a regard, because when it's a child, that child is not the one who's doing the cooking, putting the food in the fridge, doing all the shopping. So I think the whole family is affected if one member has diabetes. And I think probably to an extent, everyone in the household has to change their diets. So what advice do you have for parents with kids? I mean, how do you, if you maybe have three kids, you can't sort of put one and make one different?
No, for sure. But what we advocate is that there's no such thing as a diabetic diet, because basically a diet for people with diabetes is essentially a healthy diet for anyone. So I think what actually a diagnosis of diabetes of one of your children, if you're a parent, actually just makes your entire family more aware and more health conscious. So in that regard, it's definitely a benefit. Because you now, your whole family can focus on being more healthy, being more active, you know. So rather take it as an entire family approach of getting more healthy and being more aware about what you're eating, what you're how you're exercising, and et cetera, rather than ostracizing your child and being like, okay, no sweets for you type thing. You know, because like I said earlier, children with diabetes are able to eat sweets. Like we said, if they go low, to maybe explain to the viewer, basically, if your sugar goes low, which is below a certain level, below 4 millimoles per liter, you need to eat something sweet. So that's a common misconception that, like we said, people with diabetes can't eat sweets. So you need to actually take in some sugar to raise up your blood glucose level. And the causes of low blood glucose levels is basically too much insulin or too little food to match your insulin, or exercise makes your sugar go lower. And then it's a balancing act on the other scale, because if your sugar is too high, you then need to take insulin to bring it down.
Okay. All right. So now I really want to focus on the youth that have diabetes, because obviously that's the organization you work with. And I'm just trying to put myself in a youth's shoes who might have that. When it comes to maybe sports days, excelling in sports, or when it comes time for athletics in the beginning of the year and they randomly select you to run the 400 meter, you have no choice in the matter. Are you going to put up your hand and say, sir, I have diabetes, I'm not running today? You know, these little practical issues, I think, really do affect the youth. And do you remember when you guys were back in school, little things that maybe other people didn't notice, but that really played on your mind and that really made an impact on you? And that's when you realized, I am a bit different.
Yeah, for sure. The thing is, like, for me, diabetes is all about preparation. That's it. You just need to have to be a little bit more prepared. So like I said, exercise decreases your sugar. So basically, we always have, like, people with diabetes always just carry around some extra glucose, sweets, you know, in their pockets, some snacks, etc.
In case of emergency.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Lisa can tell you more about being, like, athletics and stuff, because she was actually a runner for Tux.
So, yeah, the thing is that kids like to use the thing is, no, I don't want to do the LO practical periods because I'm going to get a low, I don't want to exercise. And the thing is that I was a natural born sprinter since I was 6 years old or so. And I excelled, really excelled in the sports. And obviously I was 11 when I was diagnosed. So really I just got the diagnosis and I just went on with my life. Nothing changed. You know, I just continued training. And obviously it's vigorous training. It's not joking around. It's every day about 2 hours of training. And it's all about planning, like Kerry said. About an hour beforehand, you'll test your sugars, make sure it's okay. You'll eat an hour beforehand as well. And with the insulins, that's a bit of a different kettle of fish, but I've always handled it well. Yeah, and then you keep excelling. There's no problem with me. I had no problem. Went on SA's national champs, qualified for the World Junior Champs, got a bursary with Tux, ran for them. So yeah, then the studies of nursing just kicked in a bit and it was a bit crazy. But yeah, there's no excuse. You can really go to the ultimate level and you can like really achieve exactly what you want. Yeah,
I think you guys really are role models for these kids that have diabetes to realize, I almost don't want to say feel sorry for themselves, but to realize that achieving success and even in something like sports or athletics is possible with diabetes. I would imagine you're actually a lot more fit than the average person,
yeah,
because
sure,
you have to work that much,
yeah,
harder because of your disease. All right, ladies, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to find out a bit more about youth with diabetes, how people can get involved in the organization, and what advice you guys have.
I was never brave. I was young, out of control, drinking, drowning, brewing the storm. I was never brave. Threw it back, buckled, crawled, crashed. I was never brave. Fled, bled, followed, never led. If only someone had stepped in, pulled me out. That's why I became the mentor I wish I'd had.
Help under 18 say no to alcohol. Sign up at sabstories.co.za. Hashtag Be The Mentor, a South African Breweries initiative.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Christmas is on the way, and so is the happiest family event of the year, the Parkview Charity Christmas Market at the George Hay Park in Parkview from the 27th to the 29th of November. The Christmas Market is a weekend of fun, unique arts and crafts, brilliant gift ideas, kids' fun galore, big screen sports, a beer tent, and a champagne and oyster bar with continual live music. Parkview Christmas Market, for a great time, with all proceeds going to charity.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, welcome back to the Health Hour. This is Jonathan Sinclair. I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy today, who's got some business to attend to. My two guests in studio are two young ladies, Lisa van Dorsten and Kerry Calvate. Both of them have diabetes. Both are involved with youth with diabetes and are doing amazing work. Now, Kerry, we were just talking about World Diabetes Day. Or what is it called? International Diabetes Day or?
No. It is called World Diabetes Day and it's commemorated every year on the 14th of November.
Okay. So what is it about? What actually is the point? Is it awareness? Is it creating funds? What?
So the main point is to raise awareness. It was declared a international day to commemorate by the UN in 2006. And the national symbol of diabetes is a blue circle.
Okay. I'm just looking at your Twitter. It is Youth W Diabetes. You can follow them and check them out. Now, yeah, so I'm seeing a blue circle. Okay, so what is with the blue? Is that just the color they chose?
That's the color they chose. And basically the circle is to represent the unifying of people around the world, mm-hmm, with diabetes. So okay. I think what people don't realize is the extent of diabetes. So currently more than 380 million people around the world have diabetes.
380 million out of a population of 7 billion. That's quite a big percentage.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. And the stats currently are that more people every day die of diabetes than people with HIV and TB combined. So people don't, wow, realize how massively extensive it is.
Okay, all right, let's just get into this horrible thing. When you pass away from diabetes, what are you actually dying from? Is it kidney failure? Is it heart? What actually happens?
So what happens is if you have uncontrolled diabetes, so that means you have high sugars for a number of years, you are at higher risk of getting diabetes complications, which basically means when your sugar is higher than normal, it means that your blood is thicker because of the increased sugar in your blood, and it means that it cannot flow to the smaller capillaries in various places. So that affects your kidneys, your eyes, your nerves, especially in your feet and your hands. And then also increases your risk for cardiovascular disease. So basically, people who die of diabetes are primarily dying of these complications. So often, you know, the stigma of diabetes is amputations and blindness. And that's because people with what we call nephropathy, which is basically damage to your nerve cells at your feet, aren't able to feel a damage to their feet. And so if they get a sore on their foot, it gets infected, they get gangrene, and then that causes possible amputations. And then kidney failure, blindness, things like that, and cardiovascular disease. Those are the main things that people are dying of.
But these are like mainly type 2 diabetics who've been, most type 2 diabetics walk around, they don't even know they have diabetes. That's the worst part of this all.
Yes.
Your body gets used to high blood sugars, 14, 15, 16, and you get used to it. You don't even feel it. The thing is, once they get diagnosed, they've already most likely been diabetic for about plus minus 10 years.
So damage to organs and capillaries, like you say, could already have.
And then it's about, then it's too late because all the damage has already been done. It's irreversible. And then you've got the big problems like amputations because of blood flow being secluded down to your feet. It's really small hair, fine capillaries that are now blocked. So there's really nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back in time. Is diabetes increasing? And if so, why? Like, did we have this sort of, I want to call it an epidemic, did we have this 40 years ago, 50 years ago?
So yes, diabetes is increasing, but I think it's, number one, yes, lifestyle factors are massively changing. So this primarily type 2 diabetes. So of people with diabetes, 90% of people have type 2 diabetes and only 10% have type 1 diabetes. So when we're talking about all of those deaths, yes, it's primarily type 2 diabetes. So lifestyle factors and the change, urbanization is causing diabetes to increase. But at the same time, diagnosis of diabetes is much better. So,
okay, so obviously the numbers are going to go up.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So 40 years ago, people were probably dying of diabetes but didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So diagnosis has increased a lot. However, in Africa, about 40% of people with diabetes don't know they have diabetes. And like we said, then present too late and already have complications.
Okay, so should we be regularly testing our blood sugar? So for men, they advise us to go have a prostate exam every so often, and women a breast exam. What is the sort of recommended schedule for testing for diabetes or blood sugar? Or
so basically, you should be looking out for the risk factors.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an older adult, being overweight, not eating healthily, not exercising regularly. So if you're over about the age of 40, you should be testing your sugar at least once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, different organizations have screening that you can go have for free. Just go test your sugar. It takes one little drop of blood and then it's done.
Okay. So now there's a lot of organizations that are involved in diabetes, creating awareness. Lisa, you just wanted to bring up an organization that is close to your heart. Won't you tell us about that?
It's called CDE. It's the Center for Diabetes and Endocrinology.
Okay.
All right. So the head office is in Houghton. And then we've got a lot of centers right across the country. They're all GPs or endocrinologists or physicians contracted with CDE, and they're all accredited, or trained within diabetes to see patients, diabetic patients. So most people don't really know about CDE, and this is actually a wonderful place. This is a company that's Dr. Larry Distiller, who's he decided to come up with this genius plan is to get healthcare for diabetes that is accessible and that is, you know, according to best care principles, internationally, you know, best care principles, in order to give diabetics the you know, the management and the education that they need, affordable management, access to your medications, everything you need, and it costs the patient nothing because it's all worked within the medical aid and so forth. So they have developed this diabetes management program within them, and it's designed to provide extra focus on the treatment of your diabetes.
Okay, all right. So is it almost like a medical aid specifically for diabetic patients?
How it works is that there's certain medical aids that are contracted also with CDE, and if you belong to that certain medical aid, you are then eligible to join this program.
Mm-hmm.
Should you join, then you get all the benefits at no cost to you as a patient, because, you know, CDE and the medical aids have their own agreement. All right. So, okay. So they basically subsidize everything the patient needs throughout the year.
Clearly, there was a need for this. Were medical aids almost not coming to the party that there was a need for this?
Yeah, the thing is, back then in 1994, when they decided to establish this whole plan, is that the care of diabetes management was suboptimal. They weren't really medical aides weren't really keen on giving or providing, you know, medications and stuff that diabetics really need, and there was just really a very big need for this, and yeah, in that time of 1994 somewhere. So there was a big gap. So this was a very, very good plan of the Dr. Larry Distiller, and since then thousands of patients have joined networks of the doctors, any other, you know, healthcare professionals, the diabetic educated nurses, the podiatrists, the dietitians, everyone has joined.
Well, yeah. This is a thing. I don't think people realize all the people involved. It's not just one doctor. Certain people maybe can't cut their own toenails, as an example. They need to go to the podiatrist for that, or the dietitian that's involved, whether it be even a psychologist, whatever it may be. So if people want to research this and maybe want to get involved, where do they go?
Well, they can go on our newly improved website. Mm-hmm. It's www.cdediabetes.co.za, and all the info would be on there. They can just go on there. They could see what we provide. Also, for the healthcare providers, doctors, endocrinologists, anyone who wants to join, become part of this network, mm-hmm. they can also go on there. There's a different place for them as well. They will be directed to it. They can see how they can become involved. And CDE also does a lot of accreditation and education in terms of if a doctor is just a normal GP and he wants to know more about diabetes, he's got a big interest, you can come to CDE. CDE does courses, a number of courses to get you accredited. You can join the network and you can help diabetes.
Just as someone with diabetes, what are the sort of hidden costs that we don't think about? So we know about the tests and the insulin injection, but I'm sure there's a lot of other little things that we don't actually think about. It must be a costly disease to manage.
For sure. So obviously managing your highs and lows. So like I said, if you're going low, you need to be prepared, have those extra supplies with you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then for things that are, like we said, when you're going high, you also need other different managements. So we talk about ketones, that type of management. You need extra medical equipment,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like ketone strips, that sort of thing. And then any other, shall we say, complication. So, I mean, if you do have renal failure, things like that, obviously doctor's visits are more frequent. So at least twice a year, you're visiting your specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, like in the public sector, you go and visit the actual doctor four times a year. And then also you'll need to get your medication. You have to fetch it once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So transport costs in that sense are also a lot bigger, because of the, you have to sort of take a day to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking a day out of work. things like that as well.
Okay, well, I would imagine that if you were just on a standard medical aid suffering with diabetes, which is this chronic illness that really does place its sort of symptoms or effects across the whole family, and maybe if your family is all on one medical aid, the person with diabetes is almost eating up all the benefits, the blood tests and the GP visits, and I suppose that takes away from the rest of the family's health. So I would imagine that this project, or that Dr.
Larry Distello
has started, can really help families to manage this and not become financially unstable due to
I mean, this is an all-inclusive program. It includes your two doctor's visits with your endocrinologist, then you get two with your health, your educator, all right? You get all your blood tests once yearly. Your HbA1c you'll get twice a year. Then you get your podiatrist visit, you get your dietitian. And so everything is really taken care of, plus your medication is included, it's for free.
It's a lot to manage and remember, and I suppose these people can help you. Your appointment is next Monday, we'll see you then.
And it's all for free, you know, like it's included. Everything's included, your medication is included, you get a test meter. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
All right. I want to come back just to the youth camps that we were talking about earlier. I'm sure this is something that all parents who are dealing with children with diabetes need to look at, so that they don't feel alienated and different. But what are the types of activities that they could look forward to on such a camp?
Okay, so basically what our camp is, we run a weekend camp. So we'll leave Friday afternoon and then come back Sunday afternoon. So it'll be a sleepover camp, which a lot of parents are quite nervous about, you know, sending their child perhaps for the first time away from them. But for us, that's both an advantage for both the parents and the children, because the children gain independence and the parents get a bit of a break. Okay, and so then basically we do fun activities as well as educational activities that are very interactive. So we also do art therapy. So Friday evenings we do art therapy, if it's drumming or painting, that sort of thing. And then sort of Saturday and Sunday, we do a range of activities. So we'll go river rafting or abseiling or hiking.
All very physical activities.
Yes, you know, just fun, fantastic activities. And then at the same time, throughout the camp, all of the kids are testing their sugars together. So on the camp, testing and injecting are normal. So often we have some volunteers that don't have diabetes and they'll sort of fill out because they
So they'll test as well.
Yes, exactly. Okay. You know, they'll have the experience of testing and things like that.
Well, I think for a child who maybe every time at school has to go to the bathroom into the dirty cubicle to test themselves, it becomes a secretive, it becomes a dark thing. And I think going to a camp like that, seeing the normality of it, we're all doing it together, we all know that we're going back into our own lives and we deal with this, I think that can really mean the world to any child. So would you just explain how, if a parent wanted to send their child on such a camp, how they would go about that?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, our camps are planned from the beginning of the year. Then we'll set out dates or months. And basically, we'll put up those dates on our website, which is youthwithdiabetes.com. Or also on our Facebook pages. So we have Youth with Diabetes as a page and also as a group. So basically, we basically just advertise also at your local CDE branch or at your local hospital, your government hospitals. So we work with a lot of hospitals. So in our Joburg camps, we recruit kids from Joburg Gen and Kalafong in Pretoria, and also from Steve Biko in Pretoria, and what is that other one?
All these names.
That other one.
Baragwanath.
Yes, Baragwanath, yes. Tembisa Hospital. Yeah. And Marang House, which is a sort of orphanage or day house for children with diabetes and renal problems.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I wanted to speak about that in a continent like Africa, a country like South Africa that has other challenges, obviously in rural areas where people are battling to survive on a day-to-day basis anyway. If a child in that household were to be diagnosed with diabetes, how do you go about it when the family's battling to put food on the table? Now they need to provide healthy food. So how as a country are we coping with that?
So I think, you know, that is a massive challenge both in South Africa and Africa. And the thing is, for us, we wouldn't, like I said, there's no diabetic diet. Mm-hmm. We would find ways around, you know, this is what you have, this is how we can deal with it. You know, this is the insulin that you're taking. If this is the only food that you have, that's fine. We can make a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've once had a patient actually that they all they eat is bread and pup, and that's really all they have for the whole day. And now the child has a low blood sugar, and they really don't have anything to treat it with at all. Mm-hmm. And all they have is sugar water basically. So that's what they have. And at least when this child, she's about 8 years old, when she goes to school, at least they can help her there. But at home, you know, it's really just that. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you can do about it. That's how it is. So like Kerry said, you have to make it work.
Yeah, just do the best you can. So if the school can impact her in some way,
definitely,
then that's where it must be done. Now, it must be challenging for doctors, especially parents, where a child doesn't realize the severity of it, or even an adult. They don't want to commit to eating healthy. They refuse to see the consequences. In that sense, especially with regards to a child, is there intervention methods one could take if the child is constantly relapsing, constantly landing up in hospital, refusing to, almost becoming suicidal to a point? Is that something you may see?
Yes, definitely. So we have had a couple of kids who have been like that. And basically what we recommend is sort of get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, with other people, see how other people are coping and doing, and that they're living their life how they want to. You know, mm-hmm. Like we said, you can do anything with diabetes. If you want to mm-hmm. be a runner, a national athlete, you know, if you want to become a doctor or mm-hmm. anything, diabetes will not stop you. So we encourage those type of children who are having those issues and feelings and sort of thing is to get out there and find a support network that they can see role models doing mm-hmm. and living their life. You know, so, I mean, sort of suicide and depression and things like that. Definitely depression and anxiety with diabetes is definitely common. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, a once-off thing. So a lot of people feel alone, like that they can't do that. And I also encourage people and children who are experiencing that to reach out to their health team as well, because their diabetes educator and things are trained on how to help you with that. They're not going to judge you for, you know, feeling like that. They know that diabetes is a 24-hour, 7 days a week condition. Mm-hmm. And often, I mean, Lisa and I ourselves have gone through sort of what we call diabetes burnout, where, you know, you just feel like this is more than enough that you can handle, and that you need a support system to go back and feel like, please help me just to cope with this for a while.
Yeah, so do it. Get a burnout, go off your testing, don't test, do whatever, but just get back into it as soon as
possible. So, okay, so let's just classify burnout, because obviously this is something that you people who suffer with this terrible thing go through, and it's okay to have that where you say, I'm sick of taking care of myself, I'm going to go off the bandwagon for a bit, but Lisa, like you say, you got to get back on.
Yes, for sure. Don't think it's okay and I'll just leave it for a year. Then when you see again, it's, you know, 12 months has passed, and you go on and you go on, you can't get back into that lifestyle. And then when you see it, you've got a complication like your eyes or something has relapsed. So just do it for a few days, get it out your system, and get back into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like often my mom really helps me a lot, and I used to, you know, just go home for a weekend and just say, Mom, can you just, you know, deal with it for me. And she'd test my sugars for me, you know, do my insulin injections for me, sort of thing, so that I would not have to think about diabetes for a weekend, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And she'd sort of take that load.
No, as someone, I mean, you guys have had this for years and you still go through these feelings. So I think that's important for people who are just finding out about it, who are new to the disease, you know, to realize that it is a lifelong commitment and you're in it for the long haul, but to look out for that support and to ask for help. All right. So just in closing remarks, what do you want to say? And also, how do we keep up with you? You can mention your websites again. Let's start with you, Kerry.
So basically what I'd like to say is just that diabetes does not define you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have diabetes. You are not diabetic. I mean, first and foremost, you are a person who has dreams and goals. And diabetes is obviously a great part about you. But that is just one aspect of you. Mm-hmm. And yes, you need to manage it every day, but it will, you should not let it stop you. Mm-hmm. And basically, if children or parents want to get involved and come on our camps, we just recommend that they go on our website. So again, youthwithdiabetes.com, or on our Facebook page, again, Youth with Diabetes, YWD, on Facebook.
Awesome. Lisa?
Yeah, I think just don't be in denial about it. Don't test your sugar and just ignore it. You know it's high. Just test it and correct your sugars and get on with your day. And then go get inspired. I mean, go on the camps. Go see what the kids do. Come to CDE. Come talk to our brilliant educators and our brilliant doctors. I go on the camps often and I get inspired the whole weekend, and it gives me power to mm-hmm. get back into my diabetes again and go on. So please, CDE's website is www.cdediabetes.co.za, and just check our website. It's really awesome. We've got programs on there now to help our patients keep compliant with their management, you know, like you, just to give you some motivation to look after your sugars.
So you don't have to drive somewhere. It's all on the website. You can easily find information, get motivated, get on track.
You can check on the website. Obviously, everyone in their different areas, there's a doctor close to you. You can go and see that doctor. Even if you're not eligible to join the program because you're not on the right medical aid, you can still go and see the doctor, and you'll just have to pay it via your medical aid. But they are still there. Get the proper education that you need and live your life.
All right. Yeah. So I think the message is, don't stick your head in the sand. Really just face it head on and do the best that you can. And I think take away that guilt. When you do slip up, don't let it linger. Just get over it, forgive yourself, and move on. Ladies, I really think that you both are an inspiration, and I think that you don't even realize the way you are helping the youth, and just that they know that you've been through this and that you turned out so great and you've made successes of your lives and you're going into a career, Kerry, that is going to help this disease. And these are your success in athletics and now working with these organizations. I think that's really amazing. So well done to both of you.
Thank you so much.
All right. So Dr. Cindy will be back next week. This has been Jonathan Sinclair standing in for her, just talking about World Diabetes Day. But yeah, that's about it for now. And Dr. Cindy is back next week.
Health Hour on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.